Okay, mics are live. We'd like to reconvene this meeting. The next item on our agenda, I can tell, is related to budget because I have two budget experts sitting in front of me. The Board of Education will receive information for consideration of budget priorities to direct the development of the 2018-19 budget. Presentation includes a financial update on the budget status for the current year, revenue assumptions per the state's fiscal outlook, school finance and estimated JEFCO funding, and other sources, and expenditure assumptions and budget priorities as identified by cabinet staff, district leadership, and the community. We will also discuss development of the 2018-19 budget, which began at the November 16th board meeting and continued at the February 1st meeting. At those meetings, the board received information on the timeline and the objectives for development of the 18-19 budget. Updates on the current year budget assumptions per the governor's proposed budget in November and its revision in January, and we have received an overview of the community engagement plan. The staff is requesting that the board provide direction on priorities, placeholders for development of the 2018-19 proposed budget at our study session next week on March 5th. Dr. Glass, do you have anything to add?
No, other than to say that this is always just a difficult set of decisions. We have a few more dollars this year to play with than we have in previous years, assuming that the governor's budget holds, which is a major assumption. And we've got to make sure that we have our community advocating that education remains a priority for our legislator to make sure that the assumptions that we have around revenues hold. If those don't hold, then all that you're going to hear is going to have to change as well.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Glass. Welcome back, Ms. Askelson. And Nicole, welcome. And Ms. Stewart, sorry. Welcome back. Please begin.
Good evening. I'm going to turn it right over to Nicole, and she's going to start us off on the presentation, and then I'll help her out midway.
Okay, tonight we're going to talk about the current year's budget and where we are. We're going to go into the budget development for 2018-19 and where we are with that with revenue and expenditure assumptions. We are asking for early direction on the March 5th board meeting, and then we'll talk about the mill levy override sharing.
Wow.
It's hard to believe it's already March, but it is March. In order to hit that May 9th budget, proposed budget deadline, we really are asking for some early direction on that March 5th deadline so that we can build the budget. It's a process for myself and my team, and we need as much time as possible. It is just a placeholder, as we know that the March forecast could change things, and we are able to come back in that April meeting for any last minute adjustments that we need to make before the May 9th meeting. In the current year, as you know, we had an enrollment decline budgeted of 500. We also had a retirement and turnover savings estimate in the budget. Currently, we did come in better on the enrollment. Between the number of students we had and the averaging that the state does, we actually have a savings there. Our retirement and turnover savings actually was lower than what we had projected, so we budgeted $7 million. We actually came in at $5.8 million. In order to cover that shortfall, we are lucky that we have that enrollment savings that we are able to offset, and therefore we have no budget concerns with the current year's budget. Moving on to 2019 budget development. We have some revenue assumptions in here. We are assuming the January 2nd governor's proposal. We have some enrollment trends and prior year funds that we're assuming, and we have some other revenue changes that we're incorporating in. As you can see from the January 2nd revised governor's proposal, it's the 3% inflation, the student enrollment growth, and it's the decrease in the budget stabilization factor of $100 million.
And I just want to jump in and say, based on the information that Ed Bowditch has provided us about the conversations at the Capitol, this assumption around the $100 million buy-down of the BS of the negative factor is at risk. And so that's why we've got to have community members across the state advocating for public education to make sure that this assumption holds, because it will impact Jeffco's budget tremendously.
So I kind of want to add to that, Jason. I think what you're saying is that all of us are going to need to do everything we can do to hold the current budget assumptions.
That's right. There is a strong conversation around the Capitol around making transportation a major priority, which it is a major priority.
Sure.
And we know that the Senate and Republican members of our legislature are elevating transportation as a major priority. We just need to make sure that education is an equal part of that conversation, so that when final spending priorities are arrived at, education is an equal and major part of that conversation. We want to make sure that the governor's assumption here holds at the end of the day.
Will you, you or Mr. Bowditch, let us know of any upcoming opportunities to?
We certainly will.
Engage in such advocacy.
I will mention that CASB hosts region meetings where they facilitate conversations at the Capitol, and we have one for Region 5 coming up on April 18th. I will be there. Dr. Glass will join us for part of the day, and certainly all of you are welcome to, and hopefully you saw that in
the day at the Capitol.
Yep, Region 5 day at the Capitol, though we're not limited to just that day, right? But it is an opportunity to be there at a time when other public school education advocates and other school board members in Colorado will be having that same conversation.
So currently,
please continue.
Currently, with the governor's proposal, that will leave us with $30 million in state funding. After the pass-through to the charters of $3 million, that leaves us with $27 million. Here's our revenue assumptions we are building off of. We have the $27.2 million of state funding. We are going to build in another loss of students of 500, which is $4.5 million. We also are bringing back to the table that $3.7 million that was ongoing money that was funded to SBB for one time only. And then we are increasing the specific ownership tax due to what we're seeing actuals coming in at. That leaves us with $27.4 million. Now I'm gonna give it to Kathleen for expenditures.
I get the expenditure side here. So as we are building these expenditure assumptions and trying to provide all the information we can to the board, one of the things, these are the four areas that we're watching and monitoring. One, state actions and what mandates might happen there. You've heard from the District Accountability Committee tonight, so we'll be reflecting some of their requests in these presentation. Right now, negotiations is ongoing. So in this presentation, we just have some of the dollar cost placeholders for compensation. Again, no decisions have been made on any of those pieces. And then also, we were bringing you the cabinet recommendations that are representative of district-wide needs that each of the divisions bring forth, and then we prioritize within cabinet. And I'll get to those in a little bit. So far as state actions, you'll see that we have a placeholder for PARA, and that is really a very big unknown at this time. The placeholder is reflective of what the governor's proposal indicated, in that he supports the change in the calculation from gross to net, from net to gross, really, calculation on the PARA. So we have a $4.7 million placeholder you'll see later. That's actually reflective of an annual amount. It's such a shot in the dark. I mean, if that went into place in January, but there was also a percentage increase, then we might be close. You know, we'll just be very nimble with that assumption and see what happens. There have been no bills introduced at this time on PARA for us to even judge what that's looking like. We're also watching the residential assessment rate changes that are out there, the potential for impacts to the state, as well as competing state needs. Dr. Glass has mentioned we are hearing loud and clear that transportation is an issue. We just don't want to get lost in that site, that K-12 is extremely important. District accountability recommendations, we talked about DUIP support earlier. Those are noted in our cabinet recommendations, so when we get there, I'll point those out. Mental health, behavioral support was also mentioned, as well as student-based budgeting. As far as negotiations, we are currently working with our associations. We have not started compensation discussions. I've put on this slide, though, for you what steps, lanes, and quartiles would cost district-wide, $14.8 million. The cost, 1% cost of living would be $5.6 million, and both of these are loaded with benefits and across the whole organization, so it's not just one group. There's also a discussion that's going to be brought up stemming from our Benefit Advisory Committee that's recommending that we look at changing some of our benefit contributions for employees who are covered children. Currently, every employee gets the same benefit contribution from the district of $529. If you're covering children, the premium is significantly higher. $529 usually helps cover almost the whole coverage for a single employee or a single coverage person. So we haven't done any kind of difference between those type of coverages. It's something that we want to bring up, and again, it would be through the negotiations process that we would move that through. Additionally, the HR team is currently still looking at competitive market studies, and it's possible that there could be some recommendations about specific positions for recruiting and retaining and or schools hard to fill. We've talked about that in the past. So we don't have any numbers around those yet, but they could come up through the negotiation process. So cabinet recommendations, there's an attachment on our board docs of the recommendations prioritized by cabinet. When we started out earlier in January on this list, it was at $30 million. So we have prioritized that and brought that down, knowing that the limited amount of money that we have available, there was no way we were going to be able to fund that. And we worked all across our divisions in prioritizing this list. We've put the color coding up for you with some mandated requests in order that these are more compliance related. And then we have a section that we put together that's just the enrollment, the online enrollment process that we were looking at launching. And then after that, it's high priority requests. These requests fall under mandated increases, online, and prioritization. And then within the prioritization, you'll see blue highlighted dollar amounts. Those correlate to the DUIP requests. What we were trying to do here is be able to, depending on what comes through in the state, just draw the line down as how far we can fund or back up so that it's ready to go priority-wise. So that's where we're looking for the board's input on these prioritizations and if we need to rearrange or if there's something that we need to address. We are looking for that advice. Along with this sheet, you also got the budgeting for outcomes sheet for every one of these asks. And the department spent a lot of time on that information. So for every one of these requests, there is information in the board packets for that. And I would strongly encourage you to take a look at that. There's performance metrics around those as well. So this expenditure assumption, again, it's very loose. Board has to decide on what the board would decide on what we would spend on. But this is just an example of if we end up having to fund para, if we did steps, lanes, and quartiles, if we do have an assumption here for retirement and turnover savings that I want to call out again. This number I would not expect to change. As Nicole mentioned earlier, we were at 5.8 for the current year. We're taking it to 5.5 of a savings for next year. That's a good thing that we are having less people leave the system and that we are squeezing the difference between somebody leaving and somebody coming in, that there's such a salary gap. But so we have to be reflective of that as we put these estimates in. If we did a $50 increase to SBB, it's the $3.7 million that's reflected on there, and then the cabinet recommendations. So just an example, obviously, a lot of work to do about what this will really look like as we get through to the proposed budget. And then again, just trying to show that we want to balance I would not recommend building a budget this year that uses reserves. So our next steps, we have ongoing negotiations with our associations. We have a review of the RDAC recommendations, review of cabinet priorities, and we're looking for early direction on March 5th. I didn't anticipate any direction necessarily tonight, because I know it's a lot of information, and even Monday it's going to be tough. But if there's questions we can answer prior to moving on to our next topic, please, we can try to address that.
Yeah, a couple. I recognize we have a lot of question marks when it comes to PARA. Right now, the item that is specifically cited is the shift from net to gross.
Right.
So that's, we don't know yet if there will be other adjustments. But that number is likely to go up from 4.7 million and not down?
Depending on what happens at the state.
Well, my impression is that the net to gross adjustment. Well.
So we landed on that placeholder based on the governor's proposal. So the governor's proposal was not to have an increase to the employer percentage.
It seems like it's the one commonality between the governor's proposal and the PARA board proposal is that shift from net to gross.
Yes.
Which is part of why I feel like that's probably not going to change, but we might also realize an additional expense related to some of the other levers.
Correct. Yeah. And so if the if there was an employer percentage increase, again, it depends on when it gets implemented. A lot of times what we see is the implementation is January 1st because that's PARA's cycle. So this estimate could be too high if this was the only change and it went into place on January 1st. It might be a little low if something, you know, else comes along with it and goes in place in January 1st. So, yeah.
So two follow-up questions. The strategic plan, you have highlighted, and that's really helpful, that blue color coding for DUIP correlated, yeah.
Yeah.
Is there anything similar to that, like strategic plan related? Are there, or have you all as a cabinet team feel like you've incorporated those in the prioritization of the recommendations that are before us? Because there is no color coding for that, so
right.
I'm asking.
It's in the BFO sheets reflected,
okay.
And how those asks are tied to those. So as cabinet
okay.
reviewed the BFO sheets and okay. prioritized,
yeah.
that should have weighed in on our,
okay. on
our
your thinking.
Prioritization.
Finally, the $3.7 million that represents a $50 per student increase to student-based budgeting. I'm remembering last year we did one time. So does that 3.7 really just hold schools where they're at now? And then if we want them to see realize additional dollars, it's going to cost more than 3.7 million.
You know, I think the schools knew that it was one time this year and used it very strategically for that reason. They didn't really go out and hire a lot of ongoing staff, obviously, when they knew it was one time.
And this request is with the intention of making those dollars ongoing dollars.
And that was reflective, again, the reason I put that in there was because the DAC had a recommendation
yeah.
of, you know,
yeah.
funding, continuing funding SBB, so I put it in the example.
Yeah. I do want to hold that context, excuse me, though, that really is $50 that as one-time dollars they had last year. And this year it's not 50 new dollars they've never seen before.
Yeah, it would have have a more ingrained into
Golly.
Their budget.
Well, that was...
Yeah.
I was wondering, so are the SBB allocations that we received, I think, in January that we saw, that money's still in there, right?
No.
We did it through the
okay.
October adjustment. So they received that $50 per student through their October adjustment. It was never built into the base numbers
okay.
that they saw in January.
So it is more money. It is more money. It is more money.
Just keep saying it.
It is.
Are you sure?
It is because the base for elementary went up 500 per kids and high school, you know, right?
Yes, I do believe they would perceive it. I mean, they have not planned it in any way, shape, or form for 18-19.
Okay.
Thanks for clarifying that, you two.
I'd like to.
It is more money.
Yeah.
It's got to be half full in these times.
Okay.
I would like to check two things. One, in terms of our current year, I think you were saying that you know, retirements and enrollment, we believe, will balance each other, and perhaps we'll get a net neutral out of that?
We are confident that we are neutral. So we, you know, we worry about that till we make all those hurdles. How did we do on our enrollment assumption, and how did we do on retirement and turnover? Okay. And we do not anticipate any supplemental requests of the board for the current year because we had a shortfall in that arena. So we are comfortable that we made those.
And then I think you've answered my next question already. Either one of you has, but I need it clarified so I have it straight in my mind. And so can I assume this sheet that you are looking at and that I'm looking at to be essentially prioritized?
Yeah.
Yes, by cabinet, yes.
Do we have a copy of
that? It was in our...
It's on your computer.
In our board docs.
It's on board docs.
I pulled it because I'm going to need to look at it a bunch between now and Monday, but I wanted to understand exactly what it was.
Sure. Yeah.
Okay, so obviously none of us have really looked at this in depth because it's here, but... And I always get hung up on these descriptions and then the ongoing numbers, and I understand what you said, that they're highlighted in blue. If they track back to the DUIP. The line descriptions you have here are very different from what I heard those presentations to be, just some of them. And then maybe it's just me, but we should go back and make sure that, it says GT Center mental health support increase. I thought it was very clear that that is mental health supports for all GT students, not just center based students. Mm-hmm. I just say that because as we're using this as our approval line that I think it's broader than that in terms of what we're recommending for supports. And then the equity based elementary mental health supports, I didn't know that that was just for elementary mental health. So I know where it's a motivation to increase mental health supports across the board. So I will go back and double check those things, but it just jumped out at me. I recognize you guys put this together, you know, as well. We're all doing our best, but I just want to make sure that if it's broader than that in terms of the supports that we're providing, that it is described, that we understand those dollars, what they're actually going to.
And so, this is critical, and the tie to the DUIP.
Yep.
So I might have Matt weigh in and walk us through those four.
That would be great.
Blue lines, because I want.
Is that
all
right,
Iris?
Really clear. Sure. Okay.
So I can start, and then I'll share it with Mr. Carroll regarding the GT supports. When we talked tonight, and I wish I would have mentioned this earlier, the literacy support, for K-5 and the math supports that we identified to support middle school, in addition to the J-cell resources, have been incorporated to either the remaining budget we have for this school year or prioritized with budget that we will be using for next year. So you will not see those three items in particular on this prioritized list because we've already made those a priority internally and we've identified budget dollars to support that already.
Okay.
And I'm sorry I did not say that earlier. You will see line number 17 on the prioritized request for transforming the task. The reason we coded that in blue per the recommendation of the DAC DUIP subcommittee was because all of the work that we're doing to help our teachers better understand their practice, professional development to support that work, is grounded in transforming the task, meaning opportunities for students to apply and transfer their learning so they can demonstrate understanding in a variety of settings and contexts. That the specifics around transforming the task involve us creating learning labs in each of our schools to celebrate the accomplishments of our JEFCO teachers as examples of leaders and innovators when it comes to transforming the task. That is closely aligned to the professional development that would be correlated to the DUIP work in literacy and in math.
Okay. So as far as the mental health supports, I actually believe that there are three key items on this list. The first is item number 38, which is the GT counselors, and those are meant for system-wide, not just the elementary level, and not just at centers like I had mentioned earlier. They have been housed in center programs, but they are meant to support all gifted learners. Line 33 is the equity-based cells. This is emphasis at the elementary level would be 6 additional cells to support 12 elementary schools, working with SIET and Q on that to determine what those factors might be as opposed to just a standard equal allocation. It would be based on equity factors. The other one that I think is applicable is line 32. This is the potential addition of 5 registered nurses, mirroring what we're doing with the Healthy Professionals Grant in the Wheat Ridge and Lakewood and Jefferson High Schools, where we have full-time registered nurses. They are working in partnership with the cells in the area, both around regular health issues, physical health, but mental health factors too. They have some specialized training in that and have been working hand-in-hand with the area cells at the elementary and middle schools in those areas.
So this is the evening where we get answers to our questions prior to being able to provide beginning direction. And I would like to say that, you know, we could approve everything that's been presented to us tonight or give that as a primary direction. And if the budget picture changes at the state, you know, we've got to begin working on all these things.
The issue last year was we were so late on the state finishing up school finance, and we've added it to our dates at the very beginning of the presentation on the timeline so we can see again. It's in May. And so if we are in that same position again, we need to act quickly on how we end up putting these costs forward through to the budget. Any early direction's great, but we also wanted a very clear prioritized list so that we could quickly draw the line for wherever we end with all the different pieces to what we can fund. So what we're looking for is this, you know, for the board to review these and make sure they you don't see anything missing or would rather reprioritize anything at this time. And that would be very helpful on Monday for us as well.
And Ms. Askelson, I need one more clarification. I think I saw this in board docs today, but if I want more in-depth information on every one of these, I can find it on that budget request.
Yes, and yeah, I believe those requests are in order, the same order of this package.
Oh, they are.
So you should be able to page
down.
Probably
would help me some. Thank you.
Yeah, there are multiple pages for each request, so it's a lot of information.
Okay.
I have a question, Dr. Glass. I was wondering if you could. I know a month ago Diana spoke to the online enrollment system that you're talking about, and then you sent something in a weekly update. I would like to hear more information about that and what the goals, what you think problems that will solve up at the top, and how I want to hear more about it.
Yeah, in the fall we had talked about creating a system where parents that were interested in enrolling in the district or looking at choice enrollment would have the ability to enter in where they lived and preferences around different programming options, and it would bring up all of the options that are available in all of our schools. So I think our concern was that Jeffco had programming options that people didn't know about, and so we want a way that's systematic when a parent is looking for an art program, they can put in that they're interested in an art program and the PAW program is going to show up. And so that people all across Jeffco know about it. Any other schools that are operating STEM programs or arts integration programs or IB programs, there's a number of different creative and niche programs that we want to make sure people can search on if they're considering choice enrollment or just looking to see what schools are around where I live that I may want to look at. So the purpose of the online enrollment system is to create that searchable database of all of our programs and schools, allow parents to see the schools that they're interested in, to apply for enrollment at their top choices, and then changes that sorting system from a paper and pencil going to each school that you're interested in into a centralized system that then notifies the parent, you got into your first choice, you got into your second choice, or you got into your third choice, and then there would be a process where the parent would accept that or not, and make their selection, final selection. So it's just a system that takes what has been a paper and pencil choice enrollment system that really has advantaged parents who have the time, energy, and means to go from school to school to school and learn about them, and sort of democratizes and creates some equity around that where every family has access to this. And it allows us to sort of highlight and market all of the diverse quality programs that we offer in Jeffco.
Okay, so then, because I've had a few questions about this, and so if a person does want, if a parent does want a choice their student out of their neighborhood middle school, let's say, and they have an option one and option two, and they don't get into either of them, then they will be funneled back to their middle school, home middle school, or will they be assigned something else?
Yeah, you'd always want to create these systems where you can always go to your neighborhood school that you're in that boundary for. So you always have that option. So we as a public school system have an obligation to provide an opportunity for an education for every family. But if you want to go outside that, then there's a system for sort of managing what choices people are trying to get into, what's their order of preference, and we have ways of handling where we have an abundance of people trying to get into one school. There's a way that that's managed equitably and fairly.
Kind of joining into that conversation, we have district policies around choice enrollment that stipulate things like lottery and timeframes. My assumption is that this doesn't change those policies that really have developed over time in concert with communities and statutorily responsible.
Right.
Utilizing.
Yeah, you start with the statutory framework and your existing district policies. And so what you're basically trying to do is take what has been a paper and pencil and in-person process,
right,
and make that electronic. It may cause us to re-examine some of those and make some adjustments to it. But we start with whatever we've been doing, we now just want to do in a centralized and electronic
environment.
It seems
very different than what our neighboring district is doing.
Which one?
Denver.
Denver has a centralized choice enrollment system, so this is similar to that, and several districts around the country have these sorts of models in place. We had one in Eagle that we started.
Do all families have to, or is it simply available to those families that choose? Because right now about a third of our families utilize.
We're starting with just choice enrollment, so you'd use the system only if you wanted to choice out of your neighborhood school. Down the road, we see it merging with the registration process. So it's a one-stop shop. If you want to enroll your kid in Jeffco Public Schools, you go to this website. You can register them, and bang, you're in your neighborhood school. If you don't want to go to your neighborhood school, then there's a sorting checkbox or route that takes you out of your neighborhood school and into the choice process. So we're starting with it's only for choice enrollment, but we do see down the road probably. Our goal would be to have this up and running for the 2019 choice enrollment period. Probably the year after that, 2020, we would want to work toward this is where you go if you want to enroll your kid in Jeffco Public Schools, whether it's your neighborhood school or you want to use choice.
So one other kind of interesting question to me is how will you work with schools in describing or identifying their school? So I think of, for example, you may have a formal STEM program at a Deer Creek Middle or a Bell, but you also have comprehensive schools that say we have extraordinary science, technology education. Lakewood High School, for example, has partnered with NASA and has. So what will it look like to create and utilize school voice in articulating who they are to the community through that kind of catalog online?
Yeah, it really gives us an opportunity to highlight all of the things that we've got going on in our school. So we'd work with each school to develop sort of an enrollment guide or a catalog, you might imagine, where there are profiles of each and every school highlighting the things that they have going on, as well as you might imagine sort of a bulleted list of all the programs that are offered at different schools. And so it's an opportunity to sort of market and create a guidebook around here's all the options that Jeffco Public Schools provides.
And so then, just not to get into the weeds, but just dovetailing off of what Amanda said, so I understand that whole piece. That's great. It's so someone doesn't have to go to four open houses if they can't manage that, or there are three of them are on the same night. You can look at all of that and say, here's all the things. You then still have the schools involved in shadowing other opportunities, more specifics that might be catered to some specific student. This doesn't replace their involvement in that. We're getting rid of the pen and paper, but and the notification would come electronically, but there's still that connection and that process through their websites or whatever, however they're managing that on their site in terms of creating that connection with that family and child to ensure that this is the right choice.
Yeah, you'd still want, if we would encourage families, if you're interested in a school, you should go visit the school.
Sure.
And they're going to have open house nights. We need to publicize sure. all that. That could be part of that enrollment guide is also, in addition to the description of the school and their philosophy and the programs they offer, here are their open house nights or when you can come learn more about the school. Here's how you contact the school office staff if you want a tour yourself. So we want to make sure that we've got all those personal connections as well.
Can I ask, you had mentioned that you're working with Rose Family Foundation on a grant on this. Is it an all or nothing kind of, we can't move forward with any of these steps without the grant, and or we can't get the grant without moving forward with all the steps? How does that interact?
So there are some one-time costs associated with setting this up. So we've already issued an RFP and are working toward signing a contract with a national expert who's done this in other places around the country. That's one of the advantages of Jeffco doing this now is that you don't have to be on the bleeding edge of this. Other places have already done this and worked through a lot of the complexities of it. More directly to your question, there are some initial upfront costs. The Rose Foundation and other education funders are interested in supporting those initial startup costs. Jeffco is going to have to carry the ongoing costs associated with this. But what we heard in when we had the discussions around the innovation fund is where what the context of it was. There was a big push from the board to say, we want this system where people can see all the programs that we have, and we committed to you that night. That will be a priority for us. We're going to get that done. So if you recall that conversation, that's why it's a major priority for us here, because when we had that discussion, we committed to you to do it. So we are optimistic and hopeful that the Rose Foundation and other education funders come through and help us out, but if not, we're going to have to find the money from somewhere else.
So your comment about not being on the bleeding edge of this, is this off-the-shelf software? Are we having something custom developed, which we don't have great experience with necessarily?
Yeah, we're going with an off-the-shelf solution, but it's really complicated because every district's policies are different. You have different enrollment timelines. You have option schools and charter schools that add complexity to this. So there are off-the-shelf solutions, but you have to work really hard to customize them to Jeffco's context, policies, history, timelines. And so there's a lot of customization that has to be done to a off-the-shelf product.
And then it suggests that we have an ongoing subscription cost of $500,000. So
sounds about right. Yeah, $300,000 probably, plus you need some staff to manage it. Yeah. Right.
So are there cost savings at the back end because we're not going to have a lot of personnel dealing with paper and pencil?
It's probably not cost savings. It's cheaper to leave things paper and pencil. But if you want an electronic enrollment system and a catalog that's searchable, this is what it takes to stand that up.
Okay.
I could add too. I think that you have to remember we're also gaining any kind of or reducing any kind of risk or liability for claims regarding discrimination or any kind of subjectivity.
Yeah, so what he's talking about is that we assume that selections about who gets into what school are happening above board, but that's happening at a school-to-school level. So here you'd be centralizing and systemizing all of that and ensuring that it has integrity. We also will have some charter schools, option schools that have had, you know, their own processes. With our option schools, we can bring them into this. With our charter schools, we're going to have to work with them. Either they'll voluntarily come into it, or as they come up for renewal, we'll write it into their contracts that they were part of this system. I think for most of our charters, they'd be happy to be relieved of the burden of collecting all the names, running the lottery, sending out the notices, because this will replace all that. So, Mr. Rubert, in your question around, you know, what's the savings, there is some efficiency that you gain doing this centrally as opposed to each individual school trying to manage it.
Just to clarify, the grant from the Rose Foundation is to help with the startup costs?
Yeah, potential grant. They haven't committed to it yet. We're applying, but it would be just the setup startup costs.
And if we don't get that, that would be an additional burden on us?
It's going to have to come out of our budget somewhere if we want to move this forward.
I have a general question and then just a couple. It's a lot of items, and I want to front load whatever questions I can today, since Monday is going to come pretty quickly.
Comes fast.
So first of all, at times we have both an ongoing kind of budget revenue to spend and a one-time budget revenue to spend. I also recognize that last year we worked very hard as a district, thanks to all of you, to find efficiencies to accomplish some things for teacher compensation as our number one priority and to other priorities in the district. I'm not seeing kind of a pool of one-time dollars right now, and that's partly because you're saying we've got to hold our reserves where they are. There are no other anticipated one-time dollars that are flexible for us this year to spend as one-time dollars. All of it's going to need to come from that governor proposal or whatever we end up with.
But for the current year, we are still analyzing how we're going to end the year and whether we could have some potential underspend for this current year. That could be what would be a potential use of one-time dollars. If we see some division savings coming through for the current year, and we're getting ready to start analyzing that here after the February payroll posts, we would attempt to try to maybe address some of these one-time costs early and out of this current year, so that it takes the pressure off next year.
The 9.4 million in cabinet recommendations is all coming from from ongoing dollars, whereas there's 3.6 million that's one time, and we don't really have a pot for that yet.
Not yet, not identified.
Okay.
So.
Innovation fund is right up there as kind of the first among the cabinet recommendations priority requests. Can you talk to me about, again, we've received some information about the participation in that, but I know that the final steps are forthcoming. Talk to me more about that prioritization and some of the things that have happened that lead you to believe that this has been a positive launch worth sustaining.
Well, we let Tom weigh in on sort of where the process is right now and the level of interest that we've had, and maybe Karen and Christopher talk some about some of the changes that we've seen as a result of this already.
Sure, yeah. So we had a total of 104 applicants for the Innovation Fund. The total ask from those 104 applications was about $9.5 million. Out of those 104 applicants, 51 of them were through the round one committee, met the criteria to move on to the pitch round. So this week, on Monday, Wednesday, and tomorrow of this week, the 51 applicants are pitching their ideas to a committee. So we've heard two days of pitches thus far. Of the 51 pitch applicants, if you were to total up all their asks, is about $6.5 million. So we have $1 million this year that we're excited to award to those applicants, but the asks are great, and the ideas are great as well. And we expect to have our recommendations to Dr. Glass and Cabinet for which of those applicants receive the highest scores from the committee by early next week.
You're seeing a demand for $1 million in revenue to fund innovation ongoing.
Yes, that's our ask.
And so just to clarify, because I know the way that this partially rolled out was on a three-year process. So of that 6.5 million, is there an assumption kind of built in that many of those pitches had an assumption over a three-year time period to become sustainable?
That's right. So the requirement in submitting the application was that applicants articulated how after a maximum of 3 years of funding, that they would be able to sustain the innovation. So each applicant invited to pitch articulated how they would sustain their innovation after 3 years.
I want to add just a little bit around some of the changes we've seen from our teachers as well as our leaders. There's a shift in mindset around, oh, I'm not sure that's possible, to what is possible. And I think because of the Innovation Fund And because of going through the application process, schools, leaders, and classroom teachers, and DTLs, and coaches really thought hard about creative ideas, what's going to change the experience for kids in classrooms, and it's they've opened up their creative minds. So reading the applications and the group that's listening to the pitches, it's incredible to hear those ideas. Whether some of them get funded or not, we really believe we're going to see changes in classrooms because of this.
I would agree with that. I had one other question. Where did it go, Karen? It's going to come back to me. The timeline. I forgot. Or maybe, Tom, you could remind us of the after this tomorrow, then the next stage, and then when will we be hearing about the awards of the projects that are being funded?
So we anticipate that we'll be able to announce the recipients next week, and then there'll be on April 9th, I believe, I'm scheduled to give the board a more complete report on the process and what were the ideas that were funded, what were some of the other ideas that we really liked in the pitch round, but were unable to fund.
That would be great.
One more thing, at the school level, as Karen and I are going around and meeting with principals in articulation areas, what schools are doing is they are now gathering together and starting their own intervention funds to try to inspire their own staff to come up and actually create these pitches within their own school and really try to inspire people to find out what they can be doing innovating at their own school, not waiting so much for the district innovation fund, but taking care of it right now at their own school.
Mandated requests means those are requests that if we don't cover them, we're likely to fall out of compliance with the law. Yes?
Or we will have to find the money to pay for those somehow. So just really quickly, we have an increased cost for the W-2 and 1095 reporting and payroll. There's very little discretionary dollars in that budget, and we just don't have enough. I mean, that's mandated reporting we have to do. We're going to do it. So we would like to just make sure the budget accommodates that. Risk management is anticipating property insurance increases this year. We have no idea yet. That will come through to the board. It usually comes through in May, I think, is when we bring the insurance renewals. So it's early. If we somehow get lucky, we can pull this off very late in the game. But we have some reserves in risk management funds, so we're kind of trying to split the difference. We actually anticipate it to be closer to $1 million or $1.2 million higher than last year. Okay. So those are the kind of things. I mean, it's not a legal mandate, but we got to ensure the district. Yeah, right.
You don't think we're going to get lower rates after that hailstorm?
Yeah, no, I don't think so.
Then there are just a few elements that are things I might expect to see funded through SBB that are requests for district funds for a specific school. Is there a reason why a couple of those things have kind of been called out for district funding?
If the school isn't funded through SBB, so some of our option schools are not,
so that's why they're on the list. So that's, dollars or whatever,
we don't want to miss anybody.
Got
so
it.
If they're not in the SBB
formula,
yes, then they would come through the school.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, colleagues, is there more information that we need prior to providing preliminary direction? And I'm going to emphasize it's preliminary, and it probably will not be final direction, but we're going to try to do that at our next meeting on Monday. Are you feeling okay with the information we have?
Yes, yeah, so just to clarify, they're expecting more questions as well.
Sure.
From us once we've been able to process all that additional information.
We'll be okay. Prepared.
I guess the question is, are we ready to do our homework now?
I have a question. I think what would be helpful for me, last year we made some very difficult cuts. I would like to see a list of those again and just get a report from you on how you think we managed getting through the year while still paying close attention, while still providing a high quality services of the cuts that we had made. That would be helpful for me because that was very difficult last year.
Yes, and the list of reductions are on page 67 in the budget book. So from 17,
perfect.
For 17, 18. So there's a complete list there, but we can follow up with the report out on how those departments. I don't I don't believe we have a lot of reinstatements of those cuts in these requests. I know utilities was a line we did take down last year, and now we're bumping it back up because of what we're seeing. But I'd have to ask
my colleagues to weigh in on that. That would be helpful for me to make an informed decision and informed direction. Also, I was wondering, and I probably should know, and this could be for Monday as well, Jeffco SOARS. I mean, I know two different school districts that have SOARS programs, and they're two completely different things. I'd love to know more about line item 39. Monday would be fine, now would be fine, whatever.
I'm happy to share a little bit now. This is a joint effort between our Information Technology Department and our Instructional Data Services Research Department. And Jeffco SOARS in our district is really the database that teachers, principals, central leaders go to get customized information on how students are doing. Just for example, we had over 4,000 users access over nearly 400,000 pages and run nearly 55,000 reports to learn more about students. So how they're doing, where they're progress monitoring. Teachers upload information that carries on year to year to year to support that student throughout their progression in Jeffco. As this system has grown bigger and grown more valuable from our teacher perspective, our school perspective, it's growing, and that's why we've partnered with IT to say, what does this look like at the enterprise level? How do we make sure that this database meets the expectations of safety and security, in addition to meet the needs of our end users, our teachers who access this regularly?
So these four FTEs would be?
One is a project manager to continue to ensure that we're meeting the needs of our customers. There is a programmer and coding developer, as well as a database administrator. So as we've hit this scale, it's kind of like this enterprise threshold, we want to be able to make sure that we meet the needs of our customers and meet the expectations of data security through our IT department.
Thank you.
Brett, I'm happy to speak for Brett.
I'm just curious, where are we moving IDEA FTE to the general fund? Where are we moving them from?
The grant.
From a grant. So this is grant-funded work that we lose if we don't fund it at the district.
Right. Well, okay. The pressure is that as compensation has increased,
yeah,
and that's pretty much what the grant is doing, is covering compensation, the grant's not expanding with us. So this is really retaining existing FTE.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Is it that the grants are drying up, or it's just that the costs are expanding and the grant is not?
Costs are expanding and the grants are not.
Right.
Okay.
That's a good question.
All right. Ms. Askelson, I think we will look forward to providing you with the preliminary direction that you need next Monday. Thank you for this evening's presentation, and thank you, Ms. Stewart, as well. No, you weren't done?
We're done with the budget portion, but we had one more topic.
I do this to you every time. You got to start bringing us one topic. All right, go ahead.
So our next topic was to begin discussion of House Bill 17-1375, the distribution of mill levy revenue for charter schools. So if you remember, this was passed last year, and we're discussing it tonight because it requires that the board communicate a plan by July 1st, 2018 to the charters regarding sharing a mill levy. By not adopting a plan, that basically would indicate that our intention is to share equally by at least 95%. So there's a 5% allocation you can keep back per the statute. So currently, the district shares 100% in the mill levy. So we take our mill levy, it's a set dollar amount each year that we receive in our multiple mill levy overrides. We divide that by the number of FTEs in the whole district to get a per pupil amount, and then that amount times their student enrollment is what we send to them. So we have been running models since the summer. I call out to Stephanie Corbo, who's been doing a lot of big spreadsheets for us, looking at all the different options that were highlighted in the statute that we could use for allocation. We've brought a few of those models to cabinet, and everybody's weighed in on the pros and cons. And this recommendation we're bringing is what we have landed on as cabinet's recommendation for how we should continue forward in sharing. And this would take place in the 1920 school year. So no change for 18-19. That would still continue at the 100%. It's just that the plan needs to be communicated July 1st. That gives everyone a year before it would be implemented if there was any change. So our recommendation that we're bringing forward is to continue sharing 100% of the mill levy with charter schools. 95% we would allocate on the same methodology we use right now per student. But the 5% that we would withhold within that 100%, we're recommending allocating that based on free and reduced. So right now, our current dollar amounts is about $11 million that of the mill levy override that goes to charter schools. So about, based on this current year numbers, 10.8 of it would be allocated just evenly within students, and about 500,000 would go based on their free and reduced count.
So a couple things. I want to say thank you for thinking through this and giving us a kind of a presentation of what becomes a per pupil equity vision to implement. My question becomes, if that is a recommendation that makes sense for charter school pass-through dollars, is it a recommendation that makes sense for all schools? For me, what we accomplish for students based on student characteristics should be a shared value across all school sectors, that true equity recognizes that we need to honor that. So if in the case of charter school mill levy pass-through dollars utilizing this, 10.8 million would be given equally based on pupil count, straight pupil count, 500,000 would be based on FRL rates. I'm curious to know, for the 5% distributed based on FRL rates, the number of charter school students who would be dividing, quote unquote, the 500,000, and the number of charter schools that would be, quote unquote, realizing some of those dollars. And then in kind, I would like to know, if we applied that same model to all mill levy override equalization dollars, how many dollars of mill levy override monies would be distributed based on a 5% FRL model? How many students would be touched by those dollars, and how many schools across Jeffco would be touched by those dollars? And then finally, how can we utilize time? I think anytime there's a budget shift, small or large, it's a challenge. How can time be utilized to roll up any change so that rather than at 5% all at once, it's a portion of that, 1% or 1.5% in budget cycles beginning in 2019-20, right?
1920.
I tell you that term has been used at least right. twice tonight, and nobody said a word.
It's only when you say it. It's only when you say it.
So that there's a sense of sensitivity to schools being able to navigate that impact. For me, we have as part of our strategic plan a tactic that says we want to practice equity in funding. And within our charter schools, I think we've got a couple that consistently have more FRL students than our district average, but most do not. Within our neighborhood and option schools, we have quite an arc where 25 to 75% of our schools are socioeconomically, or a third of our schools are socioeconomically integrated. This feels like it would honor a curve that acknowledges unique school traits and student traits in a really equitable way across the system, and it would say to charter schools and to neighborhood and option schools, our vision of how we practice equity is shared. We have this in common, rather than something that we do piecemeal based on school sector. So for me, I'm trying to understand, and that information might help me.
I'm gonna repeat it back so I make sure that we're responsive to what you're asking. So what I think I heard was that you would like to see by charter school what this model looks like.
I don't even need to know exactly how it lands on each individual school, charter schools or
neighborhood option schools, I want to know the number of schools and the number of students it's shared with. Like, for example, if 500,000, 5% of, anecdotally, 5%, nearly 5% of the MLO equalization dollars are going to end up going to New America, a lot of them, right? A lot of that's going to go to New America because New America serves about 95 to 98% free and reduced lunch. That's probably a significant amount of money because they've got about 300, 350 students enrolled. Is that a sensible dollar amount to attach to students? Across our whole district, if we took 5%, we'd probably reach a lot more schools with a more modest but more equitably distributed amount. So I'm just, for me, because my value, and our board would have to debate this, my value is equitability based on student needs across all school sectors with a shared approach that tries to treat all our schools the same because they're all Jeffco schools, all Jeffco kids. Again, whenever you talk about moving money, it can be really scary for schools that are looking at their budgets. Time may be an element by which we can buffer a major change all at once, but it avoids any cliffs and it avoids any really weird dollar amounts going kind of all in one place in a way that doesn't necessarily.
Right. So what I want to explain on SBB, to shift funding based more on, because we have a free and reduced that we pass through from the at-risk from the state. Mm-hmm. Our mill levy override is really built into the base.
Yeah.
So in order to increase the at-risk, we would have to pull from the base funding in order to do that. So that's the impact.
Yeah. Well, and it would be redistributed to schools depending upon their free and reduced lunch population. So in that sense, I feel like it's pulling from the base, but it's being redistributed to schools in a way that's equitable. I think it's an interesting interplay of both kind of logistical implications of dollars as well as a value statement. So I'm inviting the board. Those are some of the elements that I'm watching for, and it would help me to see those numbers.
I'm going to respond to that because I want you to know that I believe it would be a grand debate, and I might be part of that grand debate because I don't think you you take money away from one group or organization and allocate it to another when you are working with limited resources. If you're going to do that, it reminds me of changing the state formula. The state formula related to how we allocate funds. That's fine if you have additional resources with which to do that so that there are not winners and losers. In this case, what we're bringing up is an issue that I probably would want to debate on exactly that same ground.
I hear you. So that part may be part of the dialogue we have on Monday as well. That information is going to inform my thinking and decision making. Is it a reasonable request to get that information? Because you're right, these are all easier decisions if we have additional dollars. But the reality is we still have to set a budget based on our values with the dollars that we have, and I want to make sure that I'm casting a vote in regards to 1375 that considers, by board policy and by, you know, moral commitment, 86,000 students and the best interests of 86,000 students, not only a specific slice of the 86,000 based on which kind of school they attend.
So just to clarify, this cabinet recommendation as it stands would require no change to the current SBB formulas.
Right.
So that topic could be a completely aside of addressing this plan.
It could be. You're absolutely right. But it'll take dollars to do that. And one of the pots of monies we pull from is mill levy override dollars. I'm also recognizing this would be much harder to do if it impacted the 2018-19 budget. It doesn't. It creates room for preparation and navigation of how the district might find to best implement that through SBB. But to my mind, if we're saying to our charter schools, we think it makes sense that you receive 95% of your dollars as a direct pass-through, but 5% should be adjusted for FRL, it seems to me like we should have the same model for for all schools.
So let me jump in here, because we started where you are. When we started working on this, so the cabinet's beginning point was, look at the law says you have two routes, right? You share 95%, which is, can you go back to the statutory part? Like, that's that part. That the statute says you do 95%, or to paraphrase, you create a new system that treats everybody this exactly the same. And when we think about treat everybody exactly the same, we have all kinds of equity elements that are built into the SBB process. So where we started was, let's treat them all exactly the same. The issue that we ran into is that charter funding and statutes related to charter funding and district managed schools, and then even the district's process that we put up around SBB, they were never designed to work together. And so when we ran those models of trying to treat them all the same, it impacted the charter schools some, but it really wreaked havoc on the SBB system that the district has. Like, we were seeing wild variations in the district's funding. And so we can share that work, because they did all that with you. And I think that would be helpful, because where we started was where you are, which is, let's just treat them all the same and create a system that all the schools are funded in the same way. And we ran into this. It just was never designed to work together when we can't make the round peg fit the square hole. Which then led us to, well, let's go back to the other option that we've got, which is share 95%. So we're meeting the intent of the law here, in that we are sharing 95%. And actually, we're exceeding that. We're going to share 100%. Yes. But the last 5%, we're saying, all right, we still have this commitment to equity, so let's distribute that part by free and reduced lunch. So I think it's in spirit, we would like to do more of what you're talking about, Amanda. Where we got it was, this was a rather simple way to solve a really complicated problem. So I think we should talk more about that and inform you kind of the process that we went through over several months on that.
Yeah, I think we ought to talk more about it. To your comment, we already, you know, take resources from one and give to another. That's what our matrix is all about. So that doesn't bother me so much. I understand the instinct about where you're headed. I guess one question I do have is, have we asked our charter schools how they would like us to consider dividing it up in a spirit of equity among the needs of children?
We did notify them that this was on the presentation tonight. Tim Matlick sent out an email to all of them detailing the plan. So they should be aware of it, but we haven't had a one-on-one conversation.
We haven't asked them.
Mm-mm, not about this presentation.
Okay.
I really felt I wanted to first make sure the board was informed about what we would be discussing.
Thank
you for that. And I would be interested in hearing, I don't know, obviously you've spoken with Tim about it and our liaison. And I would be interested to hear feedback from charter directors.
Yeah, so would I. Yep.
Mm-hmm. So this is, obviously we've got a little bit more time on this, but July 1st is coming.
That was my other question.
So, but we wanted to get started on having this conversation.
Great.
And those are tough conversations, and I appreciate us having those, because it's important for us that's our job, to have the tough conversations. And we don't improve and we don't move forward unless if we do. So thank you for initiating that.
So now I'm closing. So stay tuned.
I'm waiting for you to tell me that you're actually finished, Ms. Atkins.
So more to come. We're going to keep you updated as we move through the spring and all the actions that are happening at the state, the March forecast, so we'll keep bringing you information. March 5th, we are looking for some help on prioritization, any early direction, because we won't be back then until April 5th, and by that time, the team is really starting to build the budget. So as much as we can get in before then into that book that we're going to start creating, the better. So that's what's to come, and I'm sure we'll have more discussion.
Thank you, Ms. Askelsit. Ms. Stewart,
thanks.
I think the board will do its best to try to prepare to provide preliminary direction on Monday. That moves us to item 10 on our agenda, which is policy work. We are to review governance process policies 1 through 17. I believe we've done this once before, and when we did it last time, we actually just did them all at once. So looking at that, as if we review policy GP policies 1 through 17, are there recommended changes that you found as you went through those?
No recommended changes, but I do want to say, I'm going to wonk out just a little bit. I love reading through our governing principle.
Of course you do.
I love it.
We knew that.
It's so shocking.
But we knew that.
But one of the reasons I love that is because it really does afford for a way of doing business, norms that we share with each other to work in a unified way with hearty debate. So I'm just going to say, y'all should just pick them up and read them. They're beautiful.
I read one of them twice.
Just one of them?
Yeah, the rest of them I skimmed, but I read one of them twice, and you can guess which one, Amanda.
Oh, dear.
No, thanks for not doing that, but you could. Are there any, thanks for that,
no.
Amanda, are there any recommended changes on our GP policy?
No, not on mine.
Okay, hearing no revisions. Those policies will hold up, and we will move on to our next agenda item. And I believe that the next agenda item, I think.
Guys, here's Mr. Official. Public comment?
Huh? Oh, yeah, we need to check that. Thank you for reminding me.
Mr. Official in the room.
Is Mr. Keith Fischel in the room?
Okay,
so public comment part two is done, and that does move us to item 12 on our agenda. Thank you for joining us, Ms. Neal. And we will finish our meeting tonight working on agendas for our future meetings.
Monday, March 5th. It's a study session, and you'll begin at 9 a.m. with Great Ed Colorado and the executive director of CASB talking to you about the ballot issue going around statewide. Great Schools, Thriving Communities, I believe is the title, for half an hour. And then you have your first stock take, as mentioned earlier this evening, on transforming the task for 30 minutes. Then you return with Kathleen, Ms. Askelson, and Ms. Stewart on the direction on your budget. And you end the morning's work with principals on quality schools to meet student needs, about 45-minute discussion with a panel of principals and staff.
Can I say, I think it would be really fun to play a game where we figure out how many cabinet members can we make turn red by making a major change to Monday's agenda?
Time sensitive. Amanda is just giddy this evening.
Yes, it is.
Club
so, Neal, I,
it's live.
We should build a policy
agenda
under
is,
I think I heard you say that we were allocating a half an hour to that presentation from Great Ed Colorado and CASB on, I think it's Great Schools, Thriving Communities. And
yes.
That seems a little short to me. Do they think they can present that in a half an hour?
That's what I suggested to Ms. Meek, who has said that sounds great.
My guess is she'll plan 30 minutes and we'll fill the next 30 with questions and interaction. It might be smart to
It is your morning.
Give a little extra.
Mm-hmm. I'm just wondering if we shouldn't at least lengthen it to 45 minutes, and my guess is it will take an hour. It's a big topic, and I think our board will have questions related to that. So.
Okay, I will alert subsequent presenters on your
At least board. I'd like them prepared to stay with us that long.
Mm-hmm. Okay, mm-hmm. We can do that. Any other changes for Monday? Okay.
I think we're good on Monday.
Then your next regular meeting is April 5th, and you begin with music from Carmody Middle School Choir. And your study session is a presentation on Alternative Education Visioning Group. So our
Yes, yes, Ms. Kornbeck and Mr. Hsu could help with that if there's anything to say about that presentation. We'll have honors and recognition. You'll have a discussion with your Capital Asset Advisory Committee and a facilities update for an hour and a half at that regular meeting is anticipated. Then you'll have a stock take on expanding early childhood quality and quantity. So your second stock take on the strategic plan for April 5th. Then we have time tentatively held for another budget update if it's needed, but we'll see how that goes between now and April 5th. And that would be your meeting for the regular meeting on April 5th. Then you have your next Monday study session, April 9th, and that's a full agenda. At this point, we have another stock take on the professional model of teaching, and then engagement with the members of the Technology Data Privacy Advisory Committee, TDPAC, a presentation for 45 minutes on the JEFCO online enrollment system, another 45-minute presentation on the Innovation Fund awardees, as Mr. McDermott mentioned earlier this evening, an hour presentation on pathways to the principalship, and a half-hour presentation on graduation requirements, ending with an executive session, your quarterly check-in with the superintendent. So that's a full Monday's agenda on April 9th.
Karen, who's doing that presentation? Is that Matt Walsh? Is he a part of that? Or sorry, I don't know who's responding to that. Mr. Hsu.
Am I on? Yeah, that'll be Matt Walsh and myself, and then principals from the alternative education campuses.
Great, thanks.
I think I'm not hearing any problems. We have a busy three meetings coming up, I think. Now, we have to maintain the flexibility that, you know, we can add agenda item if we, you know, if we need to. But I don't see a problem looking at making it through April 9th with what you've described.
So one of the things that I'm noticing on as a kind of a shared superintendent and Board of Ed pending topic is opportunities to engage with teachers, engage with administrators, engage with support staff twice a year. We have had a great one with our principals.
Yes.
Are we anticipating fitting that all in May and June, or are we hoping to have one by the end of the school year with each of them?
I have asked, and we did say that when negotiations are going on, we would not be meeting. So
right.
Once those come to conclusion,
then we'll,
it may be.
Okay. Thank you.
But I think we're keeping that as a placeholder to openly say that those conversations are important to us. We may not be able to have them during the negotiations process, but we do want to have them.
But you will have employees involved in presentations as you have in April and on Monday presenting on topics that are important to you. So.
Okay. Anything else to add to our work agenda at this time? We always reserve the right to do that as we move through. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Neal. And I believe that means this meeting is adjourned at 10 p.m. this evening.
Oh, dear.
Thank you. 10.